ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 22, Prithu Maharaj's meeting with the Kumaras. Text number 41. I think the microphone is a bit, the volume is a bit high. So chapter 22, Prithu Maharaj's meeting with the Kumaras, text number 41. Maitreya Vacha Sa Evam Brahmaputrena Kumarenatma Medasa Darshitatma Gati Samyak Prashasyo Vacha Tamripa Maitreya Vacha Saevam Brahmaputrena Kumarenatma Medasa Darshitatma Gati Samyak Prashasyo Vacha Tramripaha Maitreya Uvacha Saevam Brahmaputrena Kumarenatma Medasa Darshitatma Gati Samyak Prashasyo Vacha Tamripaha. Word for word, Maitreya Vacha. The great sage Maitreya said, Saha, the king, Evam, thus, Brahmaputrena, by the son of Lord Brahma, Kumarena, by one of the Kumaras, Atma Medasa, well versed in spiritual knowledge, Darshita, being shown Atma Gati, spiritual advancement, Samyak, completely. Prashasya, worshipping, Uvacha, said, Tam, unto him, Nripaha, the king. The great sage Maitreya continued, being thus enlightened in complete spiritual knowledge by the son of Brahma, one of the Kumaras, who was complete in spiritual knowledge, the king worshipped them in the following words. Purport. In this verse, the word Atma Medasa is commented upon by Shripad Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, who says that Atmani means, quote, unto Lord Krishna Paramatmani, end quote. Lord Krishna is Paramatma, Ishvara Parama Krishna, Brahma Samhita 15.1. Therefore, one whose mind is acting fully in Krishna consciousness is called Atma Medha. This may be contrasted to the word Griha Medhi, which refers to one whose brain is always engrossed with thoughts of material activities. The Atma Medha is always thinking of Krishna's activities in Krishna consciousness. Since Sanat Kumar, who was born of Lord Brahma, was fully Krishna conscious, he could point out the path of spiritual advancement. The word Atma Gati refers to the path of activities by which one can make progress in understanding Krishna. Maitreya Vacha Sa Evam Brahma Putrena Kumarenatma Medasa Darshitatma Gati Samyak Prashasyo Vacha Tam Nripaha. Translation. The great sage Maitreya continued, being thus enlightened in complete spiritual knowledge by the son of Brahma, One of the Kumaras, who was complete in spiritual knowledge, the king worshipped him in the following words: Om Gyana Pimandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshunundamila Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadara Shri Vasati Gaur Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ram Hare Ram 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 Hare Hare. Absorption is the name of the game, as being described here. An Atma Medaha is someone who is absorbed in Krishna and in spiritual activities. So the nature of the mind is to be absorbed in something. That's how our mind is. Because the function of the mind is to think, feel and will. So thought is one of the functions of the mind, and that leads to absorption. So everybody is absorbed in something, and there's two types of absorptions. As Srila Prabhupada is mentioning here, there is the Atma Medaha and then there is the Griha Medha or the Griha Medhi. So based on one's consciousness, one will have a certain type of absorption. And Arjuna, he asked Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita in the second chapter right in the beginning, when Krishna is describing to him about Buddhi Yoga, then Arjuna asks Krishna, what are the symptoms of a person who is an Atma Medaha? Or in other words, what is the symptoms of a person who is in transcendence? Because there are a lot of people in this world, some people in this world, who pretend they are very spiritual. Right, so they are charlatans, yogis in different traditions who pose themselves as great learned men or very spiritual for the purposes of sense gratification. So Arjuna wanted to clarify who is the Atma Medaka? What are the symptoms of someone who is transcendental? And he asked that question to Shri Krishna. He says, Arjuna Vacha, Sita Pragyasya Ka Bhasha, Samadhi Stasya Keshava, Sita Dhi Kim Prabhasheta, Kim Asita Vrajeta Kim. So this is the second chapter, text number 54. So Arjuna is saying, O Krishna, what are the symptoms of one whose consciousness is thus merged in transcendence? How does he speak? How does he walk? And how does he talk? So these are very good questions. And as Srila Prabhupada says, the prime symptom of one who is Krishna conscious or who is in transcendence is by how they speak. Right? It said a fool is instantly recognized when they open their mouth. So if someone poses they're very learned in any subject matter, the way you test it is by asking them a question or by talking to them. So when they talk, in a moment, in a few seconds, you can tell where they're at by when they open their mouth. So in the same way, in Krishna consciousness, one is able to tell the consciousness of somebody by the way they speak. So a fool or a charlatan is recognized by how they're speaking. And we see people who are posing as big yogis or gurus, their talks are not on the platform of Krishna consciousness. They are Mayavadis, or they might speak a little bit about Krishna consciousness, but it's not enough. You can tell. But even more than speaking is one's actions, right? And because Arjuna also asked the question, so how does one walk? How does he sit? In other words, what are the actions of a person who is Krishna conscious? So yes, somebody could speak very nicely. They could be a very charismatic person, a very good speaker, they could be very articulate in expressing themselves. But more than speaking is also one's actions. But the prime symptom is speaking. And the other symptoms are usually follow that. And then Bhagavan Shri Krishna, he answers Arjuna's questions. Praja hati yada kaman sarvan partha manogatan atmani evatmana tushtaha sita pragyas tadochyate. So Krishna says, O Parth, when a man gives up all varieties of desire for sense gratification, which arise from mental concoction, and when his mind thus purified finds satisfaction in the self alone, then he is said to be in pure transcendental consciousness. So in other words, Krishna is saying that one who has given up all desires for sense gratification, such a person is in transcendental consciousness, right? So these are the symptoms of one who is an Atma Medha, or one whose mind is absorbed in Krishna. They, just as I was saying, it's not only the speaking, but even one's desires, one has given up desires for sense gratification. And these desires for sense gratification are usually the concoction of the mind. Our mind is telling us so many things. I will be happy in this way, I will be happy in that way, if I make this adjustment, or if I make this plan, then I will be happy. So the nature of the mind is chanchal, it is always flickering. So the mind is always coming up with various plans for happiness. And if we are just carried away by the mind, and in the Srimad Bhagavatam also the analogy of the body is given. The body is compared to a chariot which is being driven by horses, which is being driven by a charioteer, pulled by the chariot being pulled by the horses. So the mind, the senses are the horses, and then the mind is the rein. So the mind can go in any direction, it's very chanchal, but one has to control it, right? And Srila Prabhupada says that one who is on the material platform, they have no good qualifications. Because ultimate qualifications, they come from when we are Krishna conscious. Then we are, that's how we become qualified. And then another symptom Krishna describes of one who is transcendental is Dukheshrav anudvigna manaha sukheshu vigata spreha vita raga bhaya krodha stita dhir munir uchyate. So Krishna describes that one who is not disturbed in mind amidst the threefold miseries, and one who is not elated in happiness, and one who is free from attachment, fear and anger, such a person is transcendental. So the very nature of this world is of misery, right? That's the nature of this world. Dukhalyam Ashashvatam. It's in this world there is dukkha. Dukkha means sadness arising from misery. The nature of so the threefold miseries are constantly taking place in this world. So a transcendentalist is thinking, okay, I'm suffering, I'm experiencing difficulties, but I'm meant to experience much more because of my karma and because of my previous activities, but Krishna is so kind, he's only giving me a token. I'm getting a little bit of pure, I'm getting a little bit suffering, and this suffering is to purify me. So that's the consciousness of someone who's on the spiritual platform. They take misery as a token for purification, and sent by Krishna, meant for one's purification. And they don't blame others or God ultimately. So they're taking misery as a token of Krishna for purification. And in the same light, they're taking happiness. So happiness is taken as, Krishna has given me some facility. I don't deserve this, but Krishna has given me this opulence, this nice standard of living, or whatever happiness one is experiencing. And this is so I can serve Krishna nicely. So I can use these resources, or it can be anything. It could be good health or money or comfort good relationships. So one is thinking, okay, Krishna has given me these things, so I can be more peaceful in mind and render some service and be able to think of Him. So a transcendentalist sees happiness and distress in that way. Whereas a materialist, they are trying to avoid distress and they're trying to get happiness. And in this way, they're just trying to balance their life. But a Krishna conscious person sees Krishna is sending these things and is not disturbed by such things. And that's what Krishna is explaining in the Bhagavad Gita. And they're free from attachment, fear and anger. And so these things are very natural to us, to someone who is in the bodily platform, attachment, fear and anger. We are attached to so many things, attached to various arrangements, attached to different types of enjoyments. But the way it is recommended to overcome that is to dovetail everything in Krishna's service. So a yogi, when they dovetail these things in Krishna's service, when they engage in Krishna's service, then they are naturally not worried about the result, right? For example, if you are working for somebody, and as an employee of an employer, you're not really concerned, or you just do your job, but you're not concerned so much about the end outcome. Yes, of course you are concerned in the sense you have to produce, you have to deliver and produce results, but you're not concerned about whether the organization is making a profit or a loss, right? You're just doing your job, you get your money, and that's what your end of the day one is concerned about. So in the same way, when we are rendering service, yes, one is concerned, one wants to do it nicely for Krishna. One wants to do the service nicely. One wants that endeavor to be a success. But ultimately it is in Krishna's hands. The outcome is in Krishna's hands. We can try our best, but there are so many things which are outside our control, right? There's so many things in the environment which are outside our control. So a devotee is rendering service, but they know ultimately it's in Krishna's hands. And when one is thinking like that, then they are not attached. And therefore, one will also not get angry, because the outcome is ultimately in Krishna's hands. And such a person is called a sage of steady mind. And then Krishna also describes another person, another symptom of a person in transcendental consciousness is that they only engage their senses in the service of the Lord. And Srila Prabhupada gives two examples of one of a snake charmer. So a snake charmer is able to control the snake. He's able to control the movements of the snake. In India, I remember snake charmers used to come. They used to knock on the door and say, "Can we, you know, do a show for you?" And before you say no, they already the snake is out. So a snake charmer with the sound of the beena is able to control the movements of the snake. And of course the snake we know is already defanged. The poison has been removed. But a real snake charmer, the poison is there, the snake is there and they're able to control. Our Srila Prabhupada also gives the example of a tortoise, right? A tortoise only extends its limbs when it wants to walk or when it wants to go somewhere. Otherwise, it withdraws its limbs, mainly for protection. They withdraw themselves. So in the same way, a yogi employs their senses only for service. And other times, they withdraw their senses. So they're not engaged in sense gratification. So that is an Atma Medasa. So the opposite of that is a Griha Medhi. So Shukdev Goswami, is a very nice verse in the second canto of the Bhagavatam. Shrotavyadini Rajendra Nirnam Santi Sahasrasha Apashyatam Atma Tattvam Griheshu Griha Medinam. This is a very nice verse. That those persons who are materially engrossed, being blind to the knowledge of the ultimate truth, they have many subject matters for hearing in human society. So Shukdev Goswami is describing Griheshu Griha Medinam. So those who are the Griha Medis, the opposite of the Grihastas, they are engrossed in various subject matters in this world. So a Griha Medi is someone who is only interested in the necessities of life. Right? They are only interested in eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. And they have no desire to inquire into higher knowledge, into the purpose of life. So most of the population, they are Griha Medis, because they are simply absorbed in mundane subject matter. So they're absorbed in the body, in family, in various material necessities. And they have so many subject matters for hearing, right? They're absorbed in whether it's politics. Right now we had the elections. So the country was absorbed in whether Shorten is going to win or Oscomo is going to win. So the people are absorbed in mundane subject matters, in politics, in sociology, right? In there's so many social matters, and in economics, right? The main thought, the main absorption of people is how the economy is doing, and that's what you hear. If you turn on the radio or the TV, you can hear the discussion is all about the economy. How the GDP is doing. Is it going up or down? The state of the housing market. So that's what people are talking about. They're talking about mundane subject matters. They're absorbed in such things. And such a person is compared to an animal who is just who's about to be slaughtered, right? So a Griha Medi is compared to an animal who is about to be slaughtered. But they don't know they're about to be slaughtered. They're just absorbed in their nice arrangements. So if you look at cattle or goats, they're herding in the field. They have nice grass to eat, but the very next moment they could be slaughtered. A truck could come. They're on the ramp. They're loaded in the truck and off they go to the abattoir, and then they're slaughtered. They're thinking, this is such a nice arrangement. I'm eating nice, fresh grass. The wind is blowing nicely. There's water to drink. And it couldn't get better than this. This is a nice, beautiful day. I'm in the open pastures. And in the same way, people are going about their lives. People are going about their lives. A Griha Medi is simply interested in having a nice environment, right? So in the daytime, people, the Griha Medi is absorbed in economic development. In the daytime, that's what's going on. So rushing to work, working, trying to improve one's career or economic status, progressing in the corporate ladder, making nice arrangements for the family, and that's how the day goes in economic development. Fully absorbed, one's thoughts are fully absorbed in that. And then at night time, a Griha Medi is absorbed in sexual affairs. So we can see at night time all the clubs, they come to life, right? So the galleries, the men's galleries, the clubs, and nightclubs, they all come to life, and cinemas, everything, they come to life. One is absorbed in basically sexual activities. So in this way, a Griha Medi's time passes very quickly. In the daytime, The day is gone in economic development, 8-9 hours, then at night in sexual activities. And in this way, one's life passes very quickly. And Grihamedis, they are never happy. So they're always trying to improve the comfort of their life. And even if they have enough money, then they're trying to improve their family situation. So in this way, a Grihamedi is never satiated. And as their material prosperity increases, they complicate their material affairs. And so they're always short of money. The expenses also increase. And in this way, they're just entangled. And they're not interested in inquiring about the permanent nature of life. They're always absorbed in the temporary nature. So, and even if they can see, sometimes they get the realization, I'm going to die, life is temporary. When maybe somebody dies in their family or a colleague dies, then people are jolted, you know, for the moment. They're a bit shaken. So they realize, okay, life is temporary. My family is going to die. Everything is temporary. But still, they are absorbed in temporary affairs because they lack higher understanding. So an Atma Medha, they possess higher knowledge. So Krishna says there's two types of persons in this world. There is the divine and the demoniac. In the 16th chapter, Krishna says, there's two types of people. There's the divine and the demoniac. So a divine is someone who follows scripture and authority. That is a divine person. And a demoniac is somebody who does not follow scripture. And they do not follow any spiritual authority. They are acting on their own whims, as was mentioned earlier. So, a divine person, a spiritual person, Krishna tells Arjuna, you are a divine person, because Arjuna is inquiring from Krishna, who is the ultimate authority and the scripture and the source of all scriptures. So, a divine person follows Shastra. So for us, for devotees, we follow Shastra, right? And Shastra means hearing. So by hearing Krishna Katha, one is able to come to the transcendental platform. So by hearing Krishna consciousness, one's mind becomes absorbed in spiritual subject matter. So hearing is the beginning. And as Krishna said earlier, Krishna said in the second chapter, when one speaks, one can tell. So and speaking only comes from hearing. One will only speak what one is hearing. If one is hearing mundane subject matter, that's what one's speech will be. So today it's very, in one sense, it's very easy to become Krishna conscious today. And because we have so much facility to be Krishna conscious with the advances in technology, right? So right now this class is being broadcast live. And it is recorded for later, for being heard later. So we have so much ample opportunity to be Krishna conscious. One can hear. Before was not that easy, right? You have to come to class. So now you can hear any. It's very easy to be in Maya, and it's very easy to be Krishna conscious. It is just our choice. Yes, we complain sometimes this Maya is becoming very strong, but at the same time it's much easier to be Krishna conscious. There are so many books on Audible we can hear. There's so many audio books, the shastras, there's so many classes, and so many more shastras are being translated, and so many devotees are writing more and more books. And devotees are traveling, it's very easy to be Krishna conscious if we want to see in a positive light. So we can look at the same situation in a negative way, but better to look in a positive way. then it's easier to be Krishna conscious. If we look at the same situation in a positive way. And hearing is important. And before, in the days of yore, Srila Prabhupada mentions in one of the purports in the Bhagavatam, people would hear, back then, a lot of people were living in villages. People would get together in the evening, they would hear the Ramayana or the Mahabharata. They would hear one of the epics. And in this way, they were absorbing their consciousness in the Supreme Lord. And the pastimes of the Supreme Lord are very captivating. I'm listening to the Ramayana these days. There's by Krishna Dharma Prabhu. It's on Audible. And it's so absorbing by listening to the Ramayana and the pastimes of the Supreme Lord. And before, dramas were enacted, right? People, there were so many dramas in villages. They would have various dramas. The pastimes of the Lord were enacted. And in this way, it is very easy to be Krishna conscious by hearing these things. So Krishna consciousness is about, it's a culture, and ISKCON is propagating the culture of Krishna consciousness, right? This movement is about propagating the culture and the knowledge and the teachings of Krishna consciousness. So one, as Srila Prabhupada mentioned, one who is an Atma Medha, that person can propagate Krishna consciousness. And here the Kumaras have enlightened Prithu Maharaj, right? So they are Atma Medha. And in the same way, Srila Prabhupada is saying, someone who is Krishna conscious can propagate Krishna consciousness. So Srila Prabhupada propagated Krishna consciousness, this culture of Krishna consciousness. And by opening these temples are a place where the culture of Krishna consciousness is propagated. So when we come here, there's a whole culture. We partake in the culture, and it's very easy to become Krishna conscious. So I'll leave it there. You have any comments or questions on what we discussed today? Yes, Prabhuji?
You said that Krishna tells Arjuna that you are born of divine qualities. I haven't read Bhagavad Gita, but I have heard the translation, and in that it says, don't worry, you are born of divine qualities. So, does it only depend on what kind of qualities you are born with? So, could you please comment on, regardless of whichever qualities, divine or demonic, have you been born with? Why is it very much important for us to practice Krishna consciousness, and how does it affect differently?
Okay, so qualities can be acquired. So we might be born with certain qualities, but because we have free will, we can acquire certain qualities. So what I understand you're saying, why is it important to have certain qualities? Is that what you're saying?
No. So what I meant was that if you are born with demoniac qualities and divine qualities, how does practicing Krishna consciousness affect differently to divine and demoniac?
Sure. Okay. So, yes, we are born with certain qualities based on our karma. And Krishna consciousness is like a fire, right? So, this example is given. If you put a rod into fire, the rod will acquire the qualities of the fire. It will become very hot. And with that, you can burn anything, right? So, if you put a stick in fire, a metal stick, and then it becomes like fire. And if you touch that to something, if it's hot enough, it can burn it. So in the same way, Krishna consciousness is compared to the fire of transcendental knowledge. So, and Krishna consciousness is all purifying. That's one of the qualities of Krishna consciousness, right? It is all purifying. It is pure knowledge. So when we come in contact with Krishna consciousness, our qualities can change. We acquire certain modes when we are born with certain modes, right? A combination of certain gunas. But by chanting Hare Krishna, by associating with devotees, by these simple activities and reading Shastra, rendering some service, we are able to acquire spiritual qualities. And when we acquire spiritual qualities, naturally the gunas, they subside and eventually they go away. So we have to keep ourselves in transcendental activities. So that's the power of Krishna consciousness. The power of the Krishna consciousness is very pure. Simply by, it's just a matter of coming in contact with it. And to the degree we come in contact with Krishna consciousness, to that degree we will be free of material qualities. And then we acquire divine qualities. And those qualities are explained in the 16th chapter, in the first to third verse. Krishna starts off that chapter with the divine qualities and then he goes on to describe the demonic qualities. So there's nothing to despair even if we don't have divine qualities, but we can acquire them. That's the point with free will. Manmohan Prabhu. Yes.
And still we can see that, you know, in fact, you know, after coming to Krishna consciousness, we can be more productive, more efficient, and more economic development, you know. So, what is the real, you know, point of that, you know, that we work and what is the difference?
Yeah, good point. That's a very good point. And thanks for bringing that up. I should have spoken about that. So a sannyasi is somebody who is, Krishna explains in the 6th chapter, right, about what is a sannyasi. Let me read that verse. Anyway, Krishna says that someone who lights no fire. Hey, do you mind bringing the Bhagavad Gita? Thank you, Prabhu. Thank you. Where Krishna says, one who is unattached to the fruits of his work and who works as he is obligated in the renounced order of life. And he is the true mystic, not he who lights no fire and performs no work. So yes, devotees are also engaged. Most of devotees are grihasthas, right? That's how the way the world is. So, and to be, if you're married, you need money. Simple, right? You need, without money you cannot survive in this world. So a devotee needs to work, also needs to work. And when, if we have a body, we have certain needs, right? Eating, sleeping, mating, defending. So they are basic needs. One needs to, and if one is in the renounced order, like you are, then one's needs are very minimized. So you probably have a few clothes and a locker and a few possessions in it and books, right? And that's probably your what you have. So once you also have very less. So one's needs are very minimized when one is in the renounced order of life. But when one is a grihastha, one has a family, children, then naturally you need a bit more, right? One needs a house, one needs a bank balance, and and certain comforts and certain luxuries according to how one has grown up. So, and to acquire these things, one has to work. But a devotee also goes to work, but with a different consciousness, right? So Srila Prabhupada explains, to a non-devotee, they cannot tell the difference between a devotee and a non-devotee. To them, all are the same. And then those who are going to work, everybody is the same. Just coming and working, making some money, going home. So they see everyone as is the same. But for a devotee, they're going to work, as Krishna is mentioning here, but they're not, they're using the results of their work to advance in Krishna consciousness. So that's the difference between a non-devotee and a devotee. A devotee is going to work with the intention to use their the fruit of their work to be Krishna conscious. And if they have enough, then they can use some of that to spread Krishna consciousness. Right, so that's the motivation with which a devotee is going to work. And when somebody does that, then one can be very Krishna conscious just by doing that. And as you rightly said, there are many devotees who are grihasthas, but they're very advanced, right? And we have many in this community, and even in the Bhaktivinoda Thakur, for example, Bhaktivinoda Thakur is an acharya, but he was a householder. He was a magistrate. A magistrate is a very demanding job. It's not an easy job. We see magistrates today, some are committing suicide, and they're so stressed out because it is very demanding. Right? They have to make so many decisions. Serious decisions they have to make. It affects people's lives. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur was a magistrate, and he was also he had so many responsibilities, and he's an acharya. He had such an intense program. He was very, very Krishna conscious. He was using all the results of his work to propagate Krishna consciousness. He wrote so many books. So one can be a grihastha, but at the same time one can become very advanced. It's not easy. It takes effort. It is very easy to become distracted as a grihastha. Very, very easy to become distracted in economic development and so many other things. But it is possible, because there are so many examples around us of grihasthas. So yes, it is, just to sum up, it is for non-devotees, it is difficult to tell the difference, but a devotee is somebody who, a grihastha, is someone who is going to work for the purpose of using their results to be Krishna conscious, and then to also use it to spread Krishna consciousness to whatever extent and ability they can. So if they can't, if they don't have enough money, time is money also. Right, they can always use their time in rendering service. There's so many devotees who are doing so much for this movement. They're giving so much of their life. And such devotees are, Srila Prabhupada said, they're more than sannyasis. They're equivalent to sannyasis. There are so many senior devotees who are grihasthas in our movement, like Shesha Prabhu, Yadubar, and so many others. They are equivalent of sannyasis, because they have fully dedicated their lives. So it doesn't necessarily mean one has to renounce everything to be a great devotee. One can be sthane sthita shruti gata tam manobi. One can be situated where one is and make advancement. One doesn't necessarily have to change one's material circumstances. And in that way, it is actually more inspiring for people. So the society needs to see examples of people who are in their circumstances, and then people can relate to them, right? If everyone became brahmacharis and sannyasis, which is, I mean, it's good to be, but and society, we need you also, you know, we need Manmohan, we need you. We need all of you. However, if everyone was like you, then it's very difficult for people to relate to devotees. And you can probably also see that in your preaching. It's sometimes it's difficult for people to relate to you. They can relate only to an extent. And after that, you have to bring some grihasthas in the picture, in the preaching. So, and preaching is a good combination like that, when you have householders and renunciates preaching together. So people can see the entire spectrum of Krishna consciousness, right? So we need the renunciates who can inspire, and also who can speak. They can see what it means to be renounced also, and can speak in a very cutting manner. But at the same time, people need to see someone who is in their circumstances. Otherwise, it's very difficult for people to relate. And so it's a good combination to have renunciates and householders propagating the movement. Any other points?
You gave the example of fire.
Yes.
Changing from cold to hot.
Yes.
So we hope to change our demonic qualities into divine qualities by staying in Krishna conscious activities and society. But at the same time, we find that there are so many demons in the society. They were directly onto the fire of Krishna itself, but they never changed from demonic to saintly qualities at all.
Sorry, the bell, those moments in the altar, I couldn't quite hear. You were saying there's so many demons where?
Right, directly in front of Krishna, the greatest fire, but they never changed their demonic qualities to divine qualities. So they never became hot, they stayed cold.
Okay, they never became, they never became Krishna conscious. Well, it has an effect to some degree. So an analogy Srila Prabhupada gives is of grass, right? If grass is wet, it takes a while for it to become dry. Wet grass can be in the influence of fire, but it will become dry. It might just take a bit longer. So with demons who are in Krishna's association, they are getting benefit and they are becoming Krishna conscious. We don't see it. To us it seems they are not. But they are. So take Shishupal for example. Shishupal was a great demon. He was hurling insults at the Supreme Lord. But he did get benefit, right? He went to the spiritual world. And in this way, demons can change. It happens in a subtle way. Externally it might not look like, but in the background, by associating with Krishna, it is making a difference. It might not be obvious straight away. And sometimes we have to leave those people alone, just give them Krishna consciousness. But if they are demoniac and they're offensive, the strategy to engage with them is different, right? You engage in a different way. You engage by giving Krishna consciousness, but in a more indirect way. So yes, we can hold programs. People come there. Some will be very favorable, and then some will be blasphemous and offensive. Then the treatment strategy for them is to engage from a distance, is to give them prasadam, kirtan, and in that way, yes, it might look like they're not changing straight away, but there is a change happening. And if they associate long enough, you will see, maybe not in this lifetime, but maybe in some other lifetime, but there is change. Thank you.
We should lead Srila Prabhupada very systematically. We should not jump over to the state where the Bhagavatam, Srila Bhagavad Gita. You mentioned about hearing
That's quite interesting. Yes, Prabhupada said that, but we also need to understand in what context he said that, to and who he was speaking to. He also said, you can distribute nectar of devotion on the streets. So one might say that is not systematic hearing. One is going straight to nectar of devotion. Prabhupada also said, can distribute the first canto of, you can distribute entire sets of Srimad Bhagavatam to people. And he even said, we can put Bhagavatam in every set in every home. So then, if you're putting sets in people's homes, it might not be very systematic reading. People might just pick up here and there and read. So we need to also see in what context Srila Prabhupada said. I don't know what in what context he said that. If someone knows, they can mention. But as a general rule, yes, for devotees, good to read in a systematic way. Oh. So there is a systematic program which we have in this temple. There's a Srimad Bhagavatam class going systematically. Then there is disciple course, founder acharya course. Then you have Bhakti Shastri, Bhakti Vaibhav. So these are systematic studies. And then one can also pick up Shastra. As a general rule, yes, we can read the small books, Nectar of Devotion, Teachings of Lord Chaitanya, Bhagavad Gita, come to Srimad Bhagavatam, Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. And in this way, one can go in a systematic way. But every now and then, you can also just pick up a book and read, you know, this from wherever you want. There's no harm. Not sure if I answered you properly. And you can apply the same principle to hearing.
Because we see there's so many speakers, so many lectures. Sometimes you do bit. What do you listen and
you can just listen to what you're inspired by. That's how I do. Whatever I'm inspired by, I listen about that. That's my formula. So at the moment I'm inspired by Ramayana, so I'm just listening to that. That's my sole focus. So, but also we need to do systematic hearing, as Srila Prabhupada also said that. I don't know in what context, and that's why we have these courses. By going there, you're hearing and you're reading systematically, and then one can do what one is inspired by. Any final question or comments? Any comments? Sadhus, Mandesh. Okay, no. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.